So today is actually a special day on the Vaishnava calendar. It's actually Bijamashtami, and we're going to be speaking about that today in class instead of normal Bhagavatam class. So, of course, let's chant Jai Radhamadava and then I'll explain it. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Jana Malaba Hidi Bada Hari
Gopi
Gopi Jana Malaba Hidi Bada Hari
Gopi Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nandakoti Vaishnav Vrind Ki Jai.
Namacharya Shiva Huidas Thakur Vijaya Prem Sekho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shivaita Gadartha Shivasani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Gijaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Gijaya Vrindavanam Gijaya Maturidam Gijaya Jagannatha Swami Kajai Munamai Kajai Shimani Lasti Devi Gajai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Gajai Gaur Premananda Hari Haribol. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Budhle Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavani Paschacha Dejitamani So Omagana Timadanda Shagadan Jana Shalakya Chakshur Unmiditam Yena Tasmai Shikadave Namaha. So today is a very special day in the Vaishnava calendar. It's celebrated actually all over India. It's called Bijamashtami. Ashtami, of course, means the eighth day of the moon, either the full moon or the new moon. So the significance of this day in Indian tradition is that it can free you, if you celebrate this particular day, perform certain austerities on this day and hear about Grandfather Bhishma, it can actually free you from the debts to the ancestors. Of course, we understand, according to Madhavendra Puri, that if one performs devotional service, then one doesn't have any more debts to ancestors or demigods or anything like that. But it's considered a very, very special day in many parts of India, this Bijamashtami, and it's some consider it the time when Bhishma actually ascended back to Godhead, because when Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows, after he was shot full of arrows, and we're going to tell that story in a few minutes, he had the blessings of not dying until he wanted to die. And he chose specifically the moment when the sun again comes to the north, starts to come to the north, right after the sun comes to the north, which is the winter, called winter solstice. Some of you may be aware of that. It's December 23rd, generally. There's different equinoxes, which is the spring equinox, the fall equinox, the winter solstice. That's the shortest day of the year for those in the northern hemisphere. We're in the northern hemisphere. And now the days are actually getting a little longer. And of course, when it comes daylight savings time, which was not mentioned in the Vedic literatures, then it gets darker in the morning and lighter in the evening. So many people say it was the day he actually chose to leave this world after he spoke to the Pandavas, and we'll be speaking about that those particular messages in a few minutes. So, several things about Grandfather Bhishma before we tell his story is that some people question how Grandfather Bhishma could have done something so adharmic as to have fought on the wrong side of the Battle of Kurukshetra. And also, just to have sat there or stood there while there was the attempted disrobing of Draupadi. I mean, that's pretty horrendous. I mean, I know if someone attempted that here, you know, whatever, I would have gotten really angry and done something, you know, if I had a gun especially. I would have called the Dwi Bhuj.
I would have been there with you.
Yeah, Dwi Bhuj would have helped me. Because I'm not that much of a fighter. So the question is, you know, why did Grandfather Bhishma sit there? I mean, he objected to it. Why did he just go along with it? I mean, it's a really interesting question. Because he's also a Mahajan. And Mahajan means Dwadasa Mahajan. There's 12 great personalities like Grandfather Bhishma and Bali Maharaj and Pallad Maharaj and Lord Brahma, etc. So, how is it possible? And we understand from the Mahabharata, in the discussion between Yudhisthira and Yamaraj, that the Mahajana set the example for everybody else, isn't it? Mahajani Nainagi. Mahajani Nainagatasa Panta. The verse in the Mahabharata is Tarko Pratishta Shutina Vimina. That no one can understand how to act or what the absolute truth is simply by reading the Vedas. Why is that? Because Vibhina, that the Vedas are multi-branched. Krishna also says that in the Gita, doesn't he? Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nish Trigunya Bhavarjana. He says the Vedas mainly deal with three modes of nature. So if you try to look at the, and also in the Brahma Samhita, Vedeshu Durlabhama Durlabhama Atma Bhakta, like the verse we quoted yesterday, that you won't understand Krishna or the absolute truth, or basically any absolute fact by reading the Vedic literatures, and Tarko Pratishta, nor by Tarko, nor by logic and reasoning can one achieve those things. And also that's stated by Jad Bharata to King Rahugana. He says, Rahugana tata pasandaniyati anachijya nirvat panad grahadva anachandasanaiva jalagna suryar banav mahapada vajobishikam. That, my dear King Rahugana, you're not going to be able to understand or realize the absolute truth by tapasavayas, austerities, by making yourself cold in the winter or hot in the summer, nor by becoming a sannyasi or becoming a good grahastha, simply by taking shelter, abhishek, basically, of the dust of the lotus feet of the great pure devotees. In other words, without approaching a devotee or mahajana, one can't understand anything. So here's Grandfather Bhishma, he's a mahajana. And the question is, he's sitting there, or standing there, where there's the attempted disrobing of Draupadi, he's trying to kill the Pandavas, he's fighting on the wrong side of the battle of Kurukshetra. What's happening there? You know, why has he acted so improperly? And there's two explanations the Acharyas give. One is the Prabhupada gives, which is a really interesting explanation, and which is applicable to us. That because Grandfather Bhishma, Dronacharya, Kripacharya, etc., were eating food cooked in Duryodhana's kitchen, their minds became wicked. And that's actually, it's interesting, I was reading the Mahabharata, the full version of the Mahabharata, not the abridged version, and the Mahabharata actually says the same thing. It says that once upon a time, Duryodhana wanted to commit suicide. And the reason he wanted to commit suicide is that he was saved from the Gandharvas by Arjuna. You may know that story. And he thought, you know, I was saved by Arjuna, my mortal enemy, you know, this is it, you know, I'm finished. This is so embarrassing. As Krishna says in the Gita, for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. That's for Kshatriya, not for Brahmins. For Brahman, he doesn't care, you know, like Lord Rishabhadev, he just walked out and everybody was just throwing things at him and everything, and he thought, you know, Hare Krishna. But for a Kshatriya, it's like death to be dishonored. I mean, that's why they enjoy fighting, because if they die, it's preferable, because they go to heaven, right? In religious war. So, so anyway, getting back to Grandfather Bhishma, he was eating food cooked in Duryodhana's kitchen. And basically, when you eat food, cooked, impure food, Prabhupada says the mind becomes wicked. So here's Duryodhana. Previously, anyway, going back to the story, so Duryodhana was getting ready to commit suicide. And when he was in meditation, stopping eating and whatever, the other demons actually took him out of his body and gave him a pep talk. They said, you know, like you see sometimes in the middle of the football game, you know, the football team is losing, and so they huddle, bunch of gorillas, So anyway, so they had a pep talk. They said, don't worry, we're going to be able to take over, you know, and inhabit the consciousness of Grandfather Bhishma and Dronacharya and Kripacharya. Can you imagine that? Be possessed as possession, actually, by demons. So it's a fact that if one does impure things, one can be possessed by demoniac influences. For example, you know, if you eat impure food, or if you don't, you know, even there's stories in the Mahabharata about if you don't wash your hands at the right time, you do something dirty, that's an impurity, or even, or sometimes Prabhupada would mention that if you salivate, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, drool, as they say, you know, the demons can come in. So therefore, when I sleep, I actually take my mouth shut. I do. And that just meant, not because of the demons, I'm not worried about demons. It helps with apnea. You can look that up on the internet if you're interested. I can talk to you later about it. But anyway, so if you're not careful, there's all sorts of demoniac influences around the atmosphere. I mean, Krishna says in the Gita, Karanam Guna Sangasya Satasa Janma Jonishu, the cause of our entanglement is Guna Sangha, association with gunas. So if you associate with the lower modes of nature, that affects your consciousness. Or if you're in a place where the lower modes of nature are, your consciousness will be affected. Just like we're here in the temple and our consciousness becomes elevated. And then as soon as we walk out the door, we want to fight with each other. Not really, hopefully not. So different things, or people affect our consciousness, music affects our consciousness, or food affects the consciousness, especially food, according to the Ayurveda, becomes transferred or transformed into blood. And what does the blood do? It carries the consciousness, right? Like if you get a transfusion from a demon, you know, you wake up one morning and you want to eat your children or something like that. And even, you know, Krishna's own son, Boma, became a demon because of bad association. Or our gorilla friend, Dvidvida, he became a demon. He was actually a servant of Lord Ram. And of course he offended Lakshman, that's another story. But he had some issues with Lakshman. But he offended Lakshman, he had bad association, and he became a demon. So I'm not saying that Grandfather Bhishma was a demon, but he was possessed because he ate food, cooked impure food. Prabhupada actually said this, you eat impure food cooked by someone that is cooked by someone who is impure consciousness, the mind becomes wicked. Prabhupada said that. It's not a joke. It's actually true. I mean, I'll tell you my own experience with that, is that many years ago, before any of you were born, including Dweebush, I was a brahmachari assistant to a sannyasi. His name was Kridananda Maharaj, to protect the innocent. So, no, this is, sorry, we both realized this. So we were traveling, and he said, you're traveling with a sannyasi now. So basically, we can, you know, why take the trouble to cook? We can just go into the supermarket and Sri Vishnu things. You know, Sri Vishnu? You heard that expression before? I don't know if Prabhupada ever used that expression. Did he? I don't remember Prabhupada ever saying anything about Sri Vishnu in anything. But devotees got into this, you know, pick up some water. Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. Pick up some, go to the supermarket, Sri Vishnu, the whole supermarket, except for those things which could be offered. We did that. I'm not just making that up. Many of us did that, isn't it, Gokul?
Oh, yeah. I never did it.
Yeah, but people went on traveling Sankirtan a lot, they did that. So we would.
The thing number four, you couldn't drink water. You're standing in line to use water, you had to say Sri Vishnu.
Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. But Prabhupada never said it.
Is it part of a yoga when you do it for 5 seconds?
Yeah, well, that's part of the Yajna. Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. And I don't know where it came from. But anyway, so the point is, getting back to the story, so we would go into the supermarket and we'd buy just whatever we liked, you know. We had no meat, fish, or eggs, obviously. We weren't eating lobsters or anything. So we'd buy this nice, what was called oro wheat bread. Some of you might have heard of that before. It was a natural bread. And we bought, you know, grains cooked by by people who were not in Krishna consciousness. I'm not going to use the word demons. It's a silly thing to say.
Motive.
What?
They're cooked by people with a profit motive.
With a profit motive, or who were thinking impure thoughts while they were cooking it. I mean, even I read one book when I was in the university before I became Krishna conscious, how people would just throw all sorts of things, you know, into the coleslaw, or, you know, somebody fell into the soda one day and they dissolved him. So, but in any case, it's impure. And so we noticed after 2 or 3 days that we were starting to argue with each other a lot, more than normal. Because we did argue. It's a fact. I mean, I always had like a back and forth relationship with Rita Nandamaraj. But he's one of my very, very, very best friends. So with friends, you argue. I mean, that's life, isn't it? That's part of loving exchanges. I was listening to Prabhupada said that without fighting, there's no life. Because Prabhupada said, it comes from the spiritual world. You think you can have no fighting in the material world? And Prabhupada said, friends, they fight, and then they eat together, you know, chivalry, like that. So there's nothing wrong with that. We should learn how to fight with each other. And then love each other simultaneously. So anyway, so we noticed after 2 or 3 days there's more fighting, and consciousness was a little taking a nosedive, so to speak. And so then we attributed that to what we were eating. And so even though it was very austere, he arranged and I arranged to have one of these kerosene stoves, and I would roll chapatis on the wheel well of a maxi van. Maybe you don't know what a maxi van is. Some of the old folks know what that is. It's like a cargo van. And there's a wheel well where the metal goes up over the rear wheel. And so that was my table. And I would cook while he was driving the van. And you imagine kerosene. And yeah, anyway, I think you can understand how dangerous it was. I could have easily blown up, you know. it's a funny story that he was doing that, and I would say, "What are you doing? I'm driving." And we had some liquids on the stove too. He said, "I'm just teaching you how to think of Krishna." You know, he put like Krishna says, you know, like Yashaham Anugrinami Harishe Tadam Shanai. For those who I especially favor, I take away everything. Or I put them in difficult circumstances. So he was doing that. But anyway, so we learned, the point of the story is, that we actually learned how important it was to eat pure food cooked by devotees. And so Prabhupada also said to us that if you cook for yourself, you like what you eat. He also said that too. And he said, if you like what you eat, you'll digest it and you'll be healthy. So really some hints to Prabhupada. So we should like what we eat. That's why I don't try to impose my diet on other people. Because they would get very angry. So, and you digest it. And Prabhupada said, this way you get all the vitamins and minerals you need. Because why? Krishna is Jamadagni. What is Jamadagni? He's the fire of digestion. And if he's pleased, and if you have good consciousness, you can eat nails. Not that you should. And you'll actually be healthy. And that's why you have the 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan. You know, you hear about these austerities, like eating a little buttermilk every few days or 2 days or something like that. but they were deriving all the nutrition. They lived full lives. If you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll see that here someone is so incredibly intelligent. It's not that he had some nutritional deficiency or something. Or Raghunath Das Goswami's literature is Manashiksha or something, isn't it? I mean, it's not, even though they were eating very, very little, their brains were sharp because Krishna was pleased. So we cannot, of course, we cannot imitate. So anyway, so that's one of the reasons that Grandfather Bhishma, even though he's a Mahajan, acted as he did, because he was eating impure food. Prabhupada was the one who gave that reason. Mahabharata gives that reason. So that's a lesson for us. And another reason that Grandfather Bhishma acted improperly was that he had a misunderstanding of Dharma, even though he was a Mahajan. And that was brought out in the final parva, the Shanti parva, or no, the Bhishma parva, of the Mahabharata, in which he's describing what his fault was. It was a very interesting discussion at the end. He's saying that truthfulness or one's vow should be kept except where it results in a negative result. In other words, one judges ethics by the result rather than by the principle, by the details, sorry, not principle, but by the details. That's called, in ethical studies, that's called consequentialism. Does everybody understand the consequences? Mm-hmm. Consequences means the consequences of an action. So, in other words, if something is apparently ethical but will result in extremely negative results, then you have to really think whether you should keep that. In other words, Grandfather Bhishma's, speaking specifically, his promise to always support the king or the emperor, at that time happened to be Dhritarashtra, was an ethical promise, but because it had unethical results by keeping that promise, he should have broken the promise. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He should have broken the promise and stopped the attempted disrobing of Draupadi. He should have stopped the battle of Kurukshetra. And of course, Kurukshetra was Krishna's plan to just kill everybody at once, all the demons, but that's another thing. But just looking at it from one angle, if he had not fought on the side of the Kurus, there would have been no war. Because Duryodhana would not have had the courage to fight without Grandfather Bhishma, especially if Grandfather Bhishma was on the other side. So Grandfather Bhishma, in the Mahabharata, makes this apparently clear in his instructions to Yudhisthira Maharaj. He tells a story to illustrate his own fault. And that story is as follows, that he says, once upon a time, there were a bunch of dacoits, or in India called gundas, dacoits, who were following a family, and they wanted to kill the family for one reason or other. I mean, I don't know why, it's not described there. And so this family wanted to hide from the dacoits. And where did they pick to hide? Was within the ashram of a great sage. So they went into the ashram and they said, please give us protection, sage. Yeah, I'll give you protection. So the dacoits come and they pass by the sage and said, they ask, have you seen this family? And the sage says, I cannot tell a lie. They're in my ashram. You know, because he cannot tell a lie. And the dacoits killed the family. And the sage had to go to hell. Because he didn't break his promise. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I oftentimes use Grandfather Bhishma's example as to why or how we should keep our promises, especially that of initiation. But if you break your promise of initiation, it never has a good effect. But there's certain times when one may have to, just protect someone's life. Then you have to break your promise if it's a question. Let's say, all right, let's use a modern day example of the Nazis were killing people in Germany and you were hiding some Jewish people in your house. So you would have to lie, right? And there's many stories about that. People protected Jewish people by lying to the Nazis and endangering their own lives. And that's considered very exalted, that someone is sacrificing themselves for others. So that's the second reason Grandfather Bhishma made his mistake, because he was attached to the rule, the details, without understanding the essence. Now that's quite interesting, and also can be applied to us, and sometimes we're attached to certain ways of doing things. For example, I don't want to get too political because it's going to get me in trouble. But let's say we want to spread Krishna consciousness in the Western world right now. And the Western world has actually changed, if any of you have noticed, from the time that I was a new devotee to now. So you may have to make certain adjustments. And Prabhupada himself, I was just reading the Majjhalila, chapter 23 of the Majjhalila, where Prabhupada was talking about certain rules and regulations apply in India and they may not be applicable in the West and vice versa. He's talking about details. Just read that. It's definitely very explicit. Prabhupada goes over two verses and two purports in the 23rd chapter of the Majjhalila. 23rd chapter of the Majjhalila is entitled, actually, the Goal of Life, Krishna Prema. And it's the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami in Benares. So read it. It's really, really interesting. So, in other words, we have to really understand the essence of something, since sometimes details have to be adjusted. If we just stick to, things that were done 5,000 years ago, I'll be political. Let's talk about, whether ladies can be gurus. Now everybody's quiet. What is he going to say?
Party person.
Especially here, I in North Carolina, I can get away with any damn thing, but here I may get in big trouble. So people can pull out quotes from the Vedic literatures about this and that. But one really has to consider what is the best thing for spreading Krishna consciousness, and one has to think of whether we're not the body or not, whether we are the body or not. I learned that I wasn't the body. Maybe some other people think they are. So one really has to apply one's intelligence and not violate the orders of the spiritual master either. But we have, on the other hand, we have a whole group of devotees who say, yes, Prabhupada adjusted many things. Women should not go in the deity room. Women should not cook. Women should just be in the kitchen rolling rotis all the time. Or at least making bagels. That's a better idea. But you have your injunctions, different shlokas for different folks, as they say. And so you really have to use your intelligence how to apply Krishna consciousness without violating the principles of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada actually says this, one who sticks to simply the details doesn't ignore the purpose and the principles. And the principle is to create a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization, as Bhagavatam says. Then that's Nimagraha, Prabhupada said. I'm quoting from these purports. Nimagraha means following the rules and regulations, but ritualistically and not accomplishing a particular purpose. So our purpose is, the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, to make everybody Krishna conscious, to open up the world for everybody, you know, men, women, children, everybody. And there's a group of people who want to go back to, you know, the ritualistic, Brahminical conception that if you're born in a certain family, then you're Brahmin, etc., like that. But Prabhupada didn't accept that. I mean, there's that interesting story that where the devotees went to visit one of Brahmins or something like that, or one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, and the godbrother said, "Oh, you're very nice devotees. If you do your devotional service nicely, in your next life you'll get a chance to be born in Brahmin families." And when they told that to Prabhupada, Prabhupada said that you should go back and tell him if he does his Brahminical work nicely, in his next life he'll get a chance to be born in the Western world in the Hare Krishna movement. So, you know, sometimes we really get into these Niyamagraha stuffs that have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. They were just applicable to according to a certain time, place, and circumstance. Okay. So that was my preaching for today. So let's talk more about Grandfather Bhishma. You know, I have all these issues I'd like to get into. So here's Grandfather Bhishma's history. It's really interesting that once upon a time, there were these eight Vasus, they're great personalities in heavenly planets. And the head, the oldest one, his name was Jau, D-Y-A-U. And his wife wanted the desire cow from Vasishtha Muni. Vasishtha Muni had this wonderful desire cow, produced anything he wanted, not only milk, but ice cream, cheese, bagels, and things like that. But whatever, you know, soldiers. Actually, there's stories of Vishwamitra Muni, how the cow produced soldiers. So what he did is, under his wife's instruction, he and the other Vasus, they stole the cow. And then they got cursed, because they stole the cow, to take birth on the Earth planet. And so they were really upset, and they were thinking, we have to take birth on the Earth planet. Oh, actually, first they begged to Vasishtha Muni, please forgive us. And Vasishtha Muni said, all right, the one who is most responsible has to live the same length of life that all of you would have to live. The rest of you will just have a short life on the Earth planet. So then they're thinking, we need a good mother if we're going to take birth. You know, that's the most important thing. More important than the father is the mother. So they were looking around, and they saw Ganga Devi. And Ganga Devi said, yes, I'll be your mother, because actually I want to go down to the Earth planet, because I'm in love with this king, Mahavish, who's going to take birth on the Earth, because this king, Mahavish, was cursed to go down to the Earth planet, even though he was in the heavenly planets, because he looked at me improperly. He was cursed by Lord Brahma. So, therefore, you know, I'll be happy to be your mother. And they said, here's the deal, Mom. Kill each one of us after we're born. And then don't kill the final one. So she goes down to the Earth planet, just to make a long story short. And there's Shantanu, who was Mahabish, King Mahabish in his last life. And he's walking by the Ganges, and he sees this beautiful Ganga Devi. And, you know, as a king, they're passionate. They're not just like, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, I'm not supposed to be a Maya. Like some brahmacharis, isn't it? There's a Maya Devi. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Did you ever see like stuff like that? Gokul, you ever see stuff like that?
I'm afraid I didn't.
Well, those of us who distributed books and brahmacharis before, we saw a lot of that stuff. So, Maya, Maya, Maya. So, but he's a Kshatriya, so he's thinking, you know, there's nothing wrong. He's thinking, okay, let's get married. And he doesn't see a wedding ring or whatever, a Mangala Sutra on her. And he says to her, let's get married. She says, okay, it's a deal. But you can't disagree with me. the prenuptial contract. And if you disagree with me, I'm out of here. And he says, I would never disagree. That's love. It lasts for about 6 months. So I will never disagree with you. And so he exchanges garlands with her. It's a Gandharva marriage. They get married, and he's just like enamored with her until she starts to kill each one of the kids. You know, the first kid, he just can't say anything. Second kid, third kid, fourth kid, fifth kid. He's going, oh my God, what kind of wife did I marry? If I say anything, she's gone, and I'll lose the love of my life. It shows actually the dangers of lust, isn't it? That you actually are willing to put up with garbage. Not just garbage, cruelty, immorality, you know, criminality, because of lust. It's hellish. One should be ethical. So anyway, so get to the seventh, she kills the seventh, and then it comes to the eighth, and he just goes, I can't take it anymore. Stop! She said, you disagree with me, honey. I'm out of here. So she takes the boy away, but at least he's happy his son has been killed, and she takes him and gets him educated in politics by Brihaspati and the Vedas by Vasishtha Muni, and he's taught to fight, you know, martial arts by Parashuram. So she really gives him a full education. So what happens is that he comes back, to make a long story short, and Shantanu is out one day and he sees that the Ganges water has actually stopped flowing. And he's thinking, why does it stop flowing? He sees all these arrows that have made a dam. He says, who has done this? And he sees his son, Devavrat. And then Ganga Devi says, this is your son, and he accepts the son. And he's very, very happy because Shantanu is very happy because he thinks now he has someone to become the next king. So he says, you're going to come, it's called the Yuvaraj, you're going to become the appointed prince to become the king in the future. So he's extremely happy about that. But then, you know, Shantanu does have this problem of falling in love. So he goes by the Ganges again, and there's this girl, Satyavati, who's also the mother of Vyasadeva, and she's a boatman, a fisherman's daughter, and she's rowing a boat, taking people across the Ganges, and he sees her, and she has this amazing smell. She's called Ganda Yojana, which means her perfume goes for 8 miles. And the reason for that is she was blessed by Parashara Muni previously, because, you know, he had a kid, Vyasadeva, with her, and he blessed her that you're not going to smell like a fish anymore. And so she was a fisherman's daughter. I mean, there's a whole story about how she was also the daughter of King Basu. So you're not going to smell like a fish. And so he just falls in love with her, and he's told by her father that basically you cannot marry my daughter because her son has to become the next king. And he goes into a funk at that point, you know, funk, you know, depression. And he's depressed. Bhishma can't understand what's happening with dad. Finally he finds out, and he goes to the fisherman and the fisherman's daughter, makes a deal, basically, that he will not become the king and he will not get married. You know, these are the promises that he kept. And he will always serve the king. And his father says, okay, because you made that deal, I bless you. And Prabhupada said that the father's blessings in those days were actually very powerful. They really held. And so I bless you, you're not going to die unless you want to. Now you might think that's a great blessing, but sometimes it's a curse. You just have to stand around as your whole dynasty is being destroyed. So then, Satyavati, who marries Shantanu, they have some kids, Vichitravira and Chitrangada, and Chitrangada is killed by a Gandharva. Vichitravira is a little weak, so Bhishma has to find some wives for him. So he goes out, I mean, this is practically the whole story of the Mahabharata, but I'm not going to tell the whole story of the Mahabharata. So he goes out and he kidnaps the king, the daughters of the king of Kashi, Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. And so he kidnaps them, and they come back with him to marry Vajradrivya. But Amba tells him, you know, I've fallen in love with Shalva. So you have to return me. So he returns Amba, but Shalva won't take her back because that's an embarrassment for a Kshatriya. Kshatriya's not supposed to take charity. And so he rejects her, and Amba comes back and says that I want to marry you, Bhishma. And Bhishma says, I'm a brahmachari, plus I'm not going to marry anybody who hates my guts. And so he rejects her. Finally, she goes to Parashuram. Parashuram tries to convince Bhishma to marry Amba. Even has a fight with Bhishma, and Bhishma wins the fight. So Amba becomes so upset, she performs austerities to Lord Shiva that she'll be born in her next life to kill or be the cause of the death of Bhishma. So in her next life, this is really interesting, she is born, most devotees don't know this whole story, so I'm going to tell it. She is born as a lady, Drupada's daughter, okay? But Lord Shiva tells Drupada that she is a boy. So he has so much faith in Lord Shiva that even though she has all the appearances of a girl, she's a boy. I mean, that's real faith, isn't it? That's blind faith. You know, what is it? Walks like a duck, talks like a duck. It's a duck. So anyway, so he has so much faith. So he arranges a marriage of his daughter with another girl, thinking, my daughter's a boy. Blind faith. And so there's a marriage, and the other girl discovers that her husband is actually a girl, and it's not the modern time, so it's not really acceptable. And so her father, the second girl's father, decides to attack Drupada's kingdom because he feels insulted. And then this Shikhandini at this particular point feels guilty about the whole thing. That's the daughter. You know, that's the daughter who was supposed to be a boy. That she goes out to the forest to commit suicide. She runs into a yaksha named Stunavarna. And the yaksha says, I can help you. I'll give you my masculinity in exchange for your femininity. So she goes back, and she's a man at this point, Shikhandi. It's interesting. And so she was a girl, and she becomes a man. This is the whole Mahabharata story. This is not the abbreviated version. So it's, most people don't know this part. And so the yaksha says to her, just right after making things straight, come back and I'll become a man again. Okay. But in the meantime, Kuvera comes to visit the yaksha. He becomes so upset that his yaksha friend has become a woman that he curses him to remain a woman until Shikhandi dies. So Shikhandi is always a man. It's not like that. The movie, the Mahabharata, is completely wrong the way they depict the whole thing. It's always a man after this particular point. And the Shikhandi is going to be the cause of the death of Grandfather Bhishma. So anyway, so that's the story. So of Shikhandi. So then finally, fast forward, there's a battle of Kurukshetra. I want to get to some points. Whew. Not going too long. Bhishma is the commander-in-chief. He doesn't fight seriously with Arjuna. Duryodhana is taunting Bhishma. You're not fighting seriously. So Bhishma says, I have 5 arrows. With these 5 arrows, I'm going to kill the 5 Pandavas tomorrow. I'm powering these 5 arrows. So then Krishna knows what's happening. He has Arjuna go to Duryodhana, who's keeping these 5 arrows safely, and begs for the 5 arrows. So Krishna is so tricky. He's the most tricky god I know. And so Bhishma's lost his 5 arrows, but still he gets taunted by Duryodhana. And Duryodhana taunts him so much And of course, Bhima says, I've given all my potency to these five arrows, so I'm like, I can't give another five arrows. But the next day he vows either to kill Arjuna or cause Krishna to break his promise, because we know Krishna has promised not to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. And he is successful in getting Krishna to break his promise, because Krishna runs forward towards him with a chariot wheel to kill him. It's a famous picture, of course, we've all seen the picture. And then Arjuna is actually holding on to Krishna's legs. Don't do this. It's embarrassing. I'll fight him seriously from now on. And Krishna says, okay, but from now on, you've got to be serious about this fighting, not just like, you know, treat him like your grandfather anymore. So then Arjuna is fighting seriously, and then Krishna tells him, use Shikhandi as a shield, a human shield. And so he uses Shikhandi as a human shield, and he fires his arrows at Grandfather Bhishma behind Shikhandi. And then Grandfather Bhishma is filled with so many arrows that it's described in the Mahabharata, you can't even put your finger between the arrows.
Shikhandi was a woman at this point.
No, man.
A man.
Okay. He's always a man until he's killed.
Okay.
Not a woman until he's killed. Okay. Remember that, because the yaksha was cursed.
But Bhishma had never bowed.
But Bhishma vowed never to kill someone who was a woman or previously was a woman. And he knew it was Shikhandi. I mean, they knew. He also knew it was Amba, because he knew about Lord Shiva, the austerities, Lord Shiva's benediction. And they knew about past lives and everything. So he knew exactly. And then he just like put down his arms, and Arjuna was just filling him with arrows. And he still kept rushing at Arjuna. This is the Kshatriya determination. Like most of us, I mean, if you even scratch me, I'd be crying for my mother. Isn't it? Yeah, this little scratch. I go, oh my God, what's that? I want my mother to come and kiss it, make it better. So, when we were young, it was like that. And so, can you imagine even one arrow in you? I mean, Dvibhuja had some bullets in you before, right? Didn't you? You had a bullet in you? Was it painful?
Yeah, I had some bullets go through me, yeah.
Can you imagine like hundreds of bullets?
No, I can't imagine one bullet.
like all the arrows stuck in your body, and you couldn't even fit your finger, you know, finger's width between them. He didn't do the head. You know, Arjuna obviously didn't shoot at Bhishma's head. But everywhere else, and Bhishma was still rushing at him. And finally he had to shoot enough so to just knock Bhishma over on his back. And can you imagine that? And Bhishma was lying on his back. Actually, there's a whole description of the Mahabharata. He was thirsty. Because obviously, you know, really makes you thirsty being filled with arrows. And so Arjuna actually fired an arrow into the ground, and the Ganges came out and went into Bhishma's mouth. And also he made a pillow of arrows behind Bhishma just to support his head. So Bhishma was lying like that. And Krishna, in the Mahabharata, full edition of Mahabharata, Krishna gives him the benediction, your mind is going to be clear. So you're going to be able to speak clearly. And now we're going to talk about what Bhishma mentioned. In addition to what I mentioned in the beginning about consequentialism, remember I mentioned that? That something is determined ethical or not ethical according to the consequences. I mean, it's like Srila Prabhupada, for example. He came to the Western world, and some of the things that were just like rules in the Gaudiya Math, he violated. Like having women live in the ashram, right? That was a rule. No way. And Prabhupada, even as a sannyasi, was teaching the first lady in the movement how to wear a sari. Jadarani, isn't it? You know, because none of the Westerners knew how to wear a sari. What do you do with it? And so, you know, for a sannyasi doing that? Or associating, you know, Prabhupada had to live with people who were eating meat. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into someone's house and they tried to give him liquor, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so upset. This is a story in the Chaitanya Leela, that Lord Chaitanya jumped in the Ganges to purify himself. And it's described, if you see the face of someone who's not Krishna conscious, you're supposed to jump in the Ganges immediately without even taking your clothes off or putting on a bathing suit. Can you imagine if we followed that injunction? We'd have to walk around all day long with a little spray bottle. Okay, I can talk to you now. So...
You also initiated women.
But yeah, he initiated women.
But only initiated married couples.
Yeah, married couples. And we find devotees now who want to go back to that standard, violating Prabhupada's. No comments. And Prabhupada gave ladies, you know, very unique, he gave ladies Brahma Gayatri. Gaudiya Mat, even if they were initiated, the ladies didn't get the Brahma Gayatri. Prabhupada was the first one to do that. First one. Mahajaniyena Gatasa Pantha. So, but look at Prabhupada's success. His godbrothers went to Europe, and you know, I think one lady in the UK became a devotee, Vinod Vani, and Prabhupada, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers became a devotee too. One of the Europeans, German, became a devotee too, but basically, it wasn't a whole explosion. And when Prabhupada first went to America, he wanted to preach to, you know, the upper class in New York. So he went to the upper class section. But then later on, he ended up in the Lower East Side, in the Bowery. And then he had basically all of us. We weren't lower class. I mean, and Prabhupada had to live with people with animal food in their refrigerator, people who took LSD, isn't it? I mean, all these things are prohibited for Vaishnava, or even an old Vaishnava leaving India. But Prabhupada did this. I mean, it's amazing. Because palena padachiyate, you judge something by the results. So Prabhupada showed that actually the essence of Krishna consciousness is to basically carry out Lord Chaitanya's mission. Yare dekatari gar krishna upadesh, morigai guru hoi tori desh. Wherever you go, you become a guru. And Prabhupada, because of that, we're here today. Because Prabhupada was not ritualistic, Prabhupada understood the essence, he understood the things that could be changed and the things that couldn't be changed. He didn't change the Mount Mantra, he didn't change the essence, he didn't change the tattva or the siddhanta, but he adjusted things so that all of us could be here. You know, from 64 rounds to the 32 to 16, right? Can you imagine if we had to have people chant 64 rounds and take initiation? How many of us would be here?
You, may.
Me? No. I'd be a professor in some university with a big family somewhere, you know. Suffering like hell, you know. So anyways... So really, that's an important principle. You judge by the results. And Prabhupada understood that perfectly. That's why he's an acharya, because he understood that absolutely perfectly, what to adjust, what not to adjust, and how not to violate the principles of Krishna consciousness. And the proof is the success, palena padachiyate. So anyway, so apart from that, I'm going to talk a little bit, we're trying not to go on too long, about Bhishma's final instructions for all human beings. You know, obviously he gave instructions in Niti Shastra, which I'm not going to talk about right now, how to be a king to Yudhisthira, because Yudhisthira felt so guilty after the battle of Kurukshetra that Yudhisthira wanted to renounce the kingdom, because he felt he was the cause of the death of all these different soldiers. You know, millions and millions of different soldiers died. So he was feeling extremely guilty, so Bhishma had to really give him a pep talk to encourage him to become the king. So apart from that, Bhishma is giving him some instructions, ethical instructions, which are really, really useful for all of us, whether you're a king or whether you're a president of the temple. And so here are his instructions. And the first one you will all love, not to become angry. But except, like you see, Prabhupada became angry sometimes. But to protect religious principles, it's important to become angry. Like if you're a kshatriya or someone who's managing to protect religious principles, you see some adharmic thing. But not to become angry because of frustration, which Bhagavad Gita talks about, you know, jayate vishya, sangosteshya vajayate, but contemplating sense objects, you become frustrated, angry, etc. Not angry for oneself, but angry for... But one has to be careful not to be controlled by anger. One can use anger as an instrument. It's just like if you have a gun, you don't become controlled by the gun. Or... let me give a story from the Ramayana about this. Once upon a time, Sita and Ram were in the forest, and Ram had his bow. And Sita said, "I get really nervous because you have that bow." And Ram said, "Why?" And Sita said, "Because you have that bow, you're going to use it, and it's going to contaminate your consciousness." And Sita even preached to him. You know, you have this whole vision of Sita as a submissive lady, never talking back to Ram. Ain't true. She started to preach to Ram. She told Ram a story. She said, "My dear Lord, Ram, that once upon a time there was a sage, and the sage was performing austerities, and Indra became very upset with the sage's austerities because Indra thinks normally that sages want to go to heaven to be take over his position. So many times Indra sends down, what, dancing girls and things like that. But with this particular sage, he just gave the sage a bow. And then as soon as he had a bow, he started becoming cruel and he fell down." So it's like interesting. Like in America they say, guns don't kill people, people kill people. But in one sense, if you don't have control of your senses, you put a gun in people's hands. And then it pulls you into the mode. I remember when I was young, nowadays they don't give kids guns so much anymore. I mean, toy guns. Yeah. But we all had toy guns when I was young, and we had these little cap rolls. You know what I'm talking about? And nowadays, if you have, the police will probably shoot you if they see, because they're really on hair trigger when they see something that looks like a gun. But as soon as you put it in my hands, boom, I gotcha. You know, so I remember as a child I pointed it at Dwibuja and, no, we weren't children together. I was from the north. So anyway, I was a Yankee. You know, so as soon as, you know, as soon as you have it in your hands, isn't it? Does anyone experience that when they were young? You just start shooting. Boom, gotcha. And you know, you put me in a paintball place, you know, paintball. Yeah. Then it's so much fun, you're just shooting people. Boom, gotcha. Or you go to the shooting galleries. Or you go to the state fairs where they have, you win a Cupid doll. You know what that is? Uh-huh. And you just shoot these little characters. So there's something about having a weapon in your hand that changes your consciousness. It's interesting, isn't it? So Sita Devi was preaching to Ram about this. He said, "You're going to change your consciousness, Ram." Ram said, "Don't worry. I'm Ram. I vowed to protect the sages. What do you want me to do? Just say to the Rakshasas, please don't do that. Please be nice." And they said, "No, I have to kill." So anger is important sometimes. The second one, the Grandfather Bhishma says, is not to lie. And of course, then he qualifies that in terms of the consequences. Next one is to, if you have wealth, you distribute it equally to people. You don't just hoard it for yourself. And we know in Kali Yuga that hoarding wealth causes Kali to become manifest, right? Next principle is to forgive, which is really important, because oftentimes we harbor these grudges against people. Isn't it, someone does something to me? Like even in the Bible it says, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. You did it. You know, it's like little kids, basically. Who started the fight? He hit first, Mommy. doesn't matter. Jesus Christ says, you hit you on one cheek, you turn the other cheek. So you forgive. Forgiveness is divine. Prabhupada actually said that's a brahminical quality, to forgive. The next one is to beget children only with one's wife. That's a big one in Kali Yuga. It may sound just common sense, but next one is to be pure in mind and hygienic in body. You know, like Prabhupada said, Oma Pavatra Pavitrava Sarvavashtam Gatopiva Yaksmarat Pundarikaksha Savaya Vyantara Shuchi Sri Vishnu Sri Vishnu Sri Vishnu. By remembering Krishna, your mind becomes or remains pure, and by taking bath, brahminical initiation, Prabhupada would talk about that. Not to be inimical towards anyone, not to have any enemies. Of course, it's one of the qualities listed by Kapiladeva, Ajata Shatrava Shanta Shatava Sadhushanam. Next one is to be simple, simple-hearted. That means doesn't mean simple tongue, but to be a very innocent, like childlike. Very, very important. And you see, Prabhupada had all these different qualities. To support, next one is to support servants or subordinates. That means that one should not think oneself better than others, or that others are meant to be one's servants, or others are meant to serve one. But as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, dasosmi, when someone offered him obeisances, he said, I'm simply a servant. Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa Dasanu Dasa. So, and Bhishma Dev said to attain these qualities, he gives us the process. He says, to get freedom from anger, one should learn how to forgive. Think about that. These are very important instructions, which I often meditate upon. You get freedom from anger, you forgive. Try to see from the other person's point of view, the perspective of the other person. That's called, perspective taking. Next one is to be free from unlawful desires. Here's a big one. One should not make plans for material enjoyment. Because we often have these plans, I'm going to enjoy this vacation. Krishna conscious vacation is all right. You can make a plan, go to the holy town or something like that. I'm going to really go skiing and wherever. Or I see this beautiful girl or handsome man. And then you make this whole plan projecting your whole future. And you discover after you go for it, it was different. So, in other words, to live at the present, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, trust no future however pleasant. And don't live in the past, but just live in the present. Be Krishna conscious now. It's like the story Prabhupada told about the potter who was making plans to become very rich. You know the story?
Yeah.
He was making a pot, and he thought he'd sell this, get two pots, get four pots, get eight pots, two to the 10th power, 100th power. I'll become very rich. And then, all he had was the ingredients for one pot. And then he was thinking, when I become very rich, I'm going to get married, and if my wife doesn't listen to me, I'll kick her. And with that kicking motion, he kicked the first pot and destroyed his initial investment. By spiritual culture, one can conquer sleep. In other words, if one has a goal, a spiritual goal, you have a reason for getting up in the morning. Many people don't have a reason to get up in the morning. You think you get up in the morning, you see the deities. I get the chance to see the deities. I think like that in the morning, like come to Mangalarti. Wow, I'm so fortunate. Think of your good fortune. Be grateful. Right? Wow, I'm so fortunate. I get to see Radharadhakanta in the morning. I mean, isn't that amazing? We greeted the deities this morning. I'm just amazed that they're how merciful and beautiful Krishna is. Isn't it? I mean, they're radiating compassion. You want blessings, you want compassion, and you're not getting out of bed? You think you're going to get compassion from your bed? I mean, Krishna, God is standing there. Krishna's standing there. And Radharani is blessing you with pure devotional service. And you have the covers over your head? What stupidity. Sorry about that, for those who don't go to Mongolian tea. Anyway, but at least come to greet the deities in the morning. So, let me go through, because I don't have much time. I'll be speaking too long. By tolerance, one can conquer desires and avarice. In other words, you just tolerate. Vachovegam, manasat, protovegam. All these things are in the shastras too. Vachovegam, manasat, protovegam. Jivovegam, udupashtovegam. So the pushings, these pushings of the senses, I've got to do this, the mind, the senses, the anger, tongue, belly, genitals. You just tolerate it, you know. It goes away. It does go away. It really does go away. But if you give in to it, it's like throwing petrol or gasoline on a fire. Like disturbances from various diseases can be... Oh, here's a big one you know you're not going to follow. Disturbances from various diseases can be avoided by regulated diets. Sorry about that one. Anyway, it was very silent here. You know, what did he say? I'm not going to be specific about that. By self-control, one can be free from false hopes. You know, false hopes is sometimes I call them false expectations about the material world. You know, we should have real expectations. What is the expectation we should have? I'm going to get old. I'm going to get sick. I'm going to get die. I'm going to die. People will hate me. Some people may like me. People like me may hate me after some time. Isn't it? You know, you have unrealistic expectations about this world. You know, go on forever, you know. And everyone will love me. Like I had an expectation when I first started accepting disciples, the disciples would listen to me. That turned out to be an oxymoron, you know, a contradiction, submissive disciple, you know, it's a contradiction. So you have these expectations, you know. You take sannyas, you'll be a pure devotee, you know. Isn't it? You have this conception. You take sannyas and you're renounced just by getting a danda. If dandas could make people renounce, I would give everyone a danda. Right? It doesn't work like that. Money can be saved by avoiding undesirable association, Grandfather Bhishma said. Because you have undesirable association, your desires, your other desires increase because they're pushing you to want something, to keep up with the Joneses, as they say, to keep up with the Prabhus. By practice of yoga, one can control hunger. Yoga means basically moderation, according to Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. Worldliness can be avoided by culturing the knowledge of impermanence, which is Prabhupada did with us quite a bit. How often do Prabhupada talk about how temporary this material world is, how fleeting our desires are. So you can actually see Prabhupada followed all these different injunctions. You know, even though Prabhupada didn't specifically write them all down at one time, but Prabhupada was a perfect example of what Grandfather Bhishma is talking about. Dizziness can be conquered by rising up, unless you have some disease. False arguments can be conquered by factual ascertainment. So Prabhupada was expert in proper arguments. Talkativeness can be avoided by gravity and silence. You know, I often say that we should have two ears and one mouth and use the ears twice as much as the mouth, which I'm not doing right now. By spiritual prowess, one can become fearless. Abhaya sattva samshuddhi jnana yoga vivasati. And the final one is, perfect knowledge can be obtained by self-cultivation and reading Bhagavad Gita and associating with great saints and persons. So these are some of the lessons. There's a lot more in the full edition of Mahabharata that Grandfather Bhishma is. It's one of the largest, if not the largest section of the Mahabharata, Grandfather Bhishma's instructions for the bout, when he's lying on the bed before he leaves this world. Bed of arrows. So, anybody have any questions? I covered a lot and went pretty fast.
Wonderful.
So, any questions or comments about Grandfather Bhishma's history? Yes.
Maharaj, thank you. The question
speak well.
question comes to my mind. Like, I always respected Grandfather Bhishma because of his truthfulness, and I wonder if the Mahabharata would have come out, you know, way different, maybe even boring, if he hadn't.
Yeah.
He hadn't kept his promises, because I think in the spiritual world, like you have Chandravali, she's not exactly siding with Radharani.
Yeah.
It's all for Krishna's satisfaction. So the question that comes up mostly is, so consequentialism, how do we always know there's going to be a good or bad result? Like how do we...
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, you're asking two questions. Shouldn't he have actually continued doing what he was doing because that caused the fulfillment of Krishna's plan? Mm-hmm. That's your first question. And my answer is yes, it was actually Krishna's pastime. So I'm not really directly criticizing Grandfather Bhishma, because we can say as a pure devotee, he was under Yogamaya and acted in such a fashion like that. That's the way I would, from a different angle of vision, I would explain it like that. Because he is a Mahajan, he's under Yogamaya. I mean, like Grandfather, like even Lord Brahma, even after he saw Krishna, got angry at the four Kumaris because they wouldn't get married. And so that's also Yogamaya. So one has to be very careful of criticizing a pure devotee like that. So Krishna's desire was like that. And yes, if he had not done that, then Krishna's plan would not have been fulfilled, which was very important. Krishna, if you read the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam, you'll see that the demons had taken shelter on the earth planet in Kshatriya families, and Krishna came down and wanted to kill basically all the Kshatriyas, at least the demoniac Kshatriyas. So that was, Grandfather Bhishma was part of that plan. And, you know, like you also see, like the story of the Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha, where great devotees are cursing great devotees, you know, Radharani's cursing great devotees. But this is all an interaction and a leela of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from a different angle. But I was commenting on what the Mahabharata says and also what Prabhupada said about Grandfather Bhishma and the food cooked by non-devotees. Because there's also lessons there. In addition to being a leela and the desire of the Lord that Grandfather Bhishma would act like that, Grandfather Bhishma is teaching us lessons about how to act in our own lives and what not to do. Because, when we're in Maya, we're really in Maya. I mean, not you. But when I'm in Maya, I'm really in Maya. It's part of Krishna's plan that I'm in Maya today. You know, we see this sometimes, you know, some ISKCON authority will yell at a devotee, and they'll say to the devotee, "Krishna wanted me to yell at you." Do you hear that? Is Krishna's plan that I would chastise you? No. You lost control of your senses. You're not Grandfather Bhishma. So, does that answer the question? Yeah, and it's a good point. It's a very good point you brought out. Yes, it was important that Grandfather Bhishma take the wrong side in the battle court, etc. So Krishna's objective could be there to Prichanaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Shudushkrutam.
Yeah, also because When Satyavati asked him to marry the Chittavirya's wives,
yeah,
a lot of people have criticized him because he stuck to his vow, but we wouldn't have had Dhritarashtra and Pandu. It would have been a whole different scenario.
Yeah. So it was Krishna's plan. And as far as him marrying or not marrying, that I'm not really finding him fault. Well, I'm not finding fault with him in any case, but the main fault I was finding, well, hopefully I'm not finding fault, but the main criticism was that he didn't stop the disrobing of Draupadi. And that's the main criticism, and a gambling match like that.
That was an excuse to kill him.
Yeah, that was an excuse to kill him. And also, but Kripacharya, not only Grandfather Bhishma, but Kripacharya and Dronacharya also their minds became contaminated, Prabhupada said, by eating food cooked by non-devotees. So Prabhupada used that as a teaching moment for us. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a leela going on, there's the Krishna's plan going on, but there's also teaching moments, which is what I try to concentrate on. And that teaching moment is be very careful what you eat. And I experienced that. You know, if you eat something and someone doesn't have the right consciousness, it affects you tremendously. You know, so I'm very careful about who cooks for me, because I don't want to become demoniac. I cook for myself, that way I remain demoniac. But anyways, so a good question. So any other questions?
Maharaj, what is the edition of the Mahabharata that you're referring?
It's a Ganguly edition. It's the full translation. And according to Rita Nandamars, it's actually the most accurate.
Ganguly,
yeah. Okay. And a lot of these books, like the Mahabharata and the Ramayana that I read, full edition, Gita Press Ramayana, are actually written in Old English and a little hard for people to understand. Old English is almost like Shakespearean English. And it's it takes a little bit of concentration to read, but it's the ISKCON versions are extremely condensed. And so I really want to hear Grandfather Bhishma's instructions and hear all the details. Of course, at the same time, Rina Nandamaraj mentioned, and I agree with it, that the Mahabharata, and also Madhvacharya said, the Mahabharata has actually been contaminated because there's hasn't been passed. Well, it makes me peaceful. There's 84 different versions of the Mahabharata, and they've actually been contaminated because they haven't been passed down to the civil succession. So they're quite. There's a lot of difference in the details. Not the essence. Essential story is always there. For example, the South Indian version of the Mahabharata, you have Satyavati and Parashara Muni getting married in a regular marriage ceremony instead of having a kid in the middle of the Ganges River. So there's a lot of difference in the different versions of the Mahabharata. And Sripad Madhvacharya stated his commentary in the Mahabharata, Tadparatra Nirnaya, that the Mahabharata has been changed, things have been taken out, things have been added, and said it like that. So, you know, but I suggest reading it because there's a lot you can learn from it on different levels if you have the time to read it. Yes?
Yeah. If I had not been on the wrong side, if he had not had to be shot full of arrows and killed, you know, to die at a later date, but by Arjuna and so on, if that had not happened, then he could not have consoled Yudhisthira. He was the only person.
Right.
Even Krishna couldn't console Yudhisthira. So Bhishma, and so he, having been on the receiving end, of been on the wrong side, and having been so dear to Arjuna, to Yudhisthira, he could console him.
Yes.
And give that, have the opportunity to give that teaching.
Yes, that's why it was all the mouth, the Lord's plan to have it like that. That's true. I mean, you can see Krishna's hand behind everything. All I was talking about was some of the lessons for ourselves that can be learned from one angle of vision. The Mahabharata can be examined by any from many different angles of vision. And certainly Bhishma was under the influence of Yogamaya, being a pure devotee of the Lord. And even his attempted stealing of the Kamadhenu by Vasishtha Muni was actually part of the plan of the Lord. You know, like you have the Tulsi Shaligram Vivah, where there's the cursing of Subal, right? And so, you know, Subal is getting angry at Radharani. Radharani curses him to become a demon. You know, you could say, what's happening? These pure devotees. So these are all pastimes. But there's, even within the pastimes, there's lessons to be learned. And the Acharyas deal with those lessons. And to me, the lessons from the Mahabharata, especially, you know, the thing about eating food, which Prabhupada actually spoke more about than the Leela portion. Especially, well, it sounds like a Rakshasa is coming.
Oh, God. Earth is stressed.
I know they're pounding the lamps. For the
Ristasura.
So, Prabhupada actually spent more time talking about the lessons And one of the first things he actually posted in the temple was, one should not eat food cooked by people not Christian, not just... That's one of the first things Prabhupada posted. Prabhupada was really emphasizing us keeping purity. And obviously there's pastimes and Grandfather Bhishma and Dronacharya, Kripacharya, you know, whatever their internal position was in relationship with Krishna, that's another issue. But these are important lessons. And like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stated when he was asked, what is the quality of a Vaishnava? The first thing he said was a satsanga chage Vaishnava char, which is a Vaishnava avoids bad association. And so that's the lesson that I glean from it. So that, yeah, just look at something from different angles of vision. Yeah.
I wanted to ask a question about that story. In the time when that, you know, eating food prepared by, non-devotees, so therefore. But the way I heard that story was, I just want to concur if it's correct what I'm saying, because I don't want to give a class and say it and it's not right.
Okay.
So, after Bhishma had pacified Yudhisthira with, you know,
right,
those eloquent teachings, I've heard that at that point, Draupadi scoffed and said, oh, so many eloquent words you're saying. Why couldn't you say something when they were trying to destroy
you? That's true.
And then so Bhishma replied, I'm very sorry, Mataji. I couldn't do anything because I was eating food prepared by demons.
Yeah.
Is that the right time in the story when that
came? In one of the editions of the Mahabharata, it happens like that, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada wouldn't say anything that wasn't shastric. That's true. And he was eating food. And as far as Dronacharya, it wasn't just the food with Dronacharya. It's described in the Mahabharata that he was attached. He had taken the work, basically, of a Shudra, even though he was a Brahmin, and that contaminated him because he was... There's the whole story in the Mahabharata that he couldn't maintain his family, you know, Ashwatthama, his son, and everybody else. So he wanted to become the teacher so he would get employment. And so when you get employment, and there's nothing wrong with employment, I'm not criticizing that, but you become controlled by the person who's employing you. Yeah, whenever there's some financial exchange, then the person who's giving you money is actually controlling you to a certain extent. And so therefore, of course, devotees should sometimes have jobs, and that's not the point. But their preaching should not be contaminated by financial considerations. You know, that's the real point. That if I was getting, let's say, I'm sitting here giving class, and Dvibhuj is giving me a salary, which is not... Somebody's giving me something, but, you know, I'm thinking, I gotta please him, I can't say anything wrong.
Sorry.
Because I'll be fired. You know, like Bhagavat Saptaha people, for example, Prabhupada comments on that. They could do these Bhagavat Saptahas, and there's financial consideration. So they actually put up, many of them, not all of them, they put on an act because they're going to get money for it, you know. And so if someone's preaching activities have any financial consideration to them, that's a contamination. That's a contamination. One should preach, and, you know, if someone gives a donation, you know, Hare Krishna, it's nice. And if someone doesn't, I'm not going to change what I say. But still, you know, so if someone has to have a job, this is brought out in the Jiva Dharma. In the Jiva Dharma, there's, Rajanath was his name. And he's going to his guru, and he says, Guru Maharaj, you know, I'm giving Bhagavatam class, and I'm maintaining myself by Bhagavatam teaching. And the guru says, no. No, you should not do this. You should maintain yourself by doing some job or something, you know, some business on the side, even though he's a Brahmin. And so it doesn't mix with your preaching. You know, if you're preaching, is your financial means of making money. I mean, book distribution is a different thing. So Prabhupada encouraged that. But as far as, like, let's say if I'm preaching to people, then I discriminate. Well, I'm going to preach to Dweeboot since he's so rich, but Yogindra, you know, the hell with him. You know, he doesn't even have a house. Right? All right, I'll preach to Maharani. But anyways, so I mean, if I, you know, because those thoughts could come in the mind of someone, right? You know, I'm going to go, like, for example, if I heard that Bill Gates was interested in Krishna consciousness, I'd be over his house in 10 seconds. And all of you, you know, who the hell cares about you? You're just Okies from Pinocchio or something. So that's, one should not allow that to enter into one's mind like that. And so that was the case with Drona. There's a whole story about Drona wanting, he couldn't even, I mean, at least there was the story there that he couldn't give milk to Ashwatthama. Some of you may be aware of that story. And he, you know, and then, anyway, so he was taking employment. So here, so there's the external reason. Yes, internally Krishna wanted it to happen. Therefore, you know, Prajnaya, Sadhunam, all the demons were killed. Jai, Haribo. But I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from that, as far as keeping internal purity. Yeah.
In this part you talked to her about should never leave the holy Dham and come across the ocean. Dhammadharma, I said the first time he met Srila Prabhupada, he came into the room, the first words out of Prabhupada's mouth was, "Why have you come here?" Prabhupada said, "I've come to give something. Why have you come here?" So Dhammadharma said, "I knew I'd met my spiritual master at that moment."
Yeah, Prabhupada showed demonstrate the essence of Vedic principles, or Krishna conscious principles. And so many times people, they want to revert back to a so-called Vedic past, which really wasn't the Vedic past, you know, ritualistic Vedic past. And that's, there's a whole group of people in India who are just like, want to go back there. And they're actually Americans. They're not even from India. They're the newbie Brahmins. So I don't want to get too much into the politics about that. Yeah, one more question.
She has a question.
See, I can't see you. Can't see.
You said about money part. So if you have some devotional service, and if you earn some money from outside, and you tell someone, "I will pay you something and you do for me," is it correct to do?
I refuse to testify in that. On the grounds that may tend to incriminate me, you take the Fifth Amendment? Can you do that here? So, well, people need to be maintained. Yeah, I mean, just to speak about that subject matter, people do have some financial necessities. You know, if I was a pujari and I had family members who were dying, then I might need some financial remuneration. Not a salary, but financial remuneration to meet my needs. We all have different needs. So that should not contaminate one's consciousness, but at the same time, we have to meet the devotee's needs. You know, and I think that's important too, that, you know, I'll be able to do RT, but I have these needs. So I don't think, each case has to be examined individually. And usually I don't find people asking for extraordinary amounts of money, like $5,000 for each RT. I remember, it's funny, like Prabhupada, the first time I saw Prabhupada was in Gainesville, Florida. So Armarendra, you all know Armarendra? He wanted to bring, he was like the vice president, and Rina Nandamari was the president. So he wanted to bring Prabhupada to Gainesville. This is 1971. And so Prabhupada said, I'll come if they give me an honorarium. So Amarendra, he actually got the student body to give $1,000 to Prabhupada.
Wow.
Which at that time is worth, what, how much now? 10,000 or something, or 5,000, or whatever it is. And Amarendra, you know, he was a student radical leader before he joined the Hare Krishna movement. And so Prabhupada came. Came for like 2 or 3 days. That's the first time we got a chance to see Prabhupada, 1971.
You mean the university, they cut a check for Prabhupada?
Yeah, they cut a check for Prabhupada. $1,000. Prabhupada gave them that challenge. But it's not that Prabhupada was interested in money, but Prabhupada wanted to see if they'd hear nicely. So another time Prabhupada said, we should charge, you know, one public program said we should charge money, and they'll take it seriously. Because if someone pays something, then they're going to listen. If something's free, and I've seen that before, sometimes when you give out books for free, you might probably saw that in the airport sometimes, they end up in the garbage. But when someone would pay something for it, Prabhupada really wanted people to pay for the books. Because when you pay for it, you really take it seriously. You know, it's an investment. You know, I know whenever I pay for something, I make sure I use it or read it or do something with it or sell it. Because it's, you know, it's in my mind. I put money into it, right? So, I mean, there are sometimes when there is consideration of money when dealing with things, so people will take things more seriously.
The Gainesville Food Program, been going on for so many years, but I think maybe 10, 12 years ago, where they started charging instead of free, and it increased, double
people came.
Yeah, double people came. And they were able to produce more prasadam for people. So, you know, sometimes like restaurants where people pay for the food. Like that. So there's all sorts of considerations. I'm not against financial remunerations. It's not necessarily a bad thing, and each case has to be examined individually. Oh, yeah. Another question. Oh, yawning. Okay. So I guess we should end now because it's time for prasadam, and I will get accused of cruel and unusual punishment, which is against the Constitution of the United States, right? Because I'm keeping you from prasadam. Okay, all glorious to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Prabhupada Ki Jai. I'll let everybody see the deities and everybody here. What are you saying? Here's everybody. Big crowd. And the deities. Okay. Oops. Let's see what someone's chatted.